Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, board-certified geriatrician and the founder of the website betterhealthwhileaging.net. And this is the Better Health While Aging video podcast, where we discuss common health problems that affect people over the age of 60 and the best ways to prevent and manage those problems. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about an issue that affects many older adults, which is constipation. Now, constipation is actually quite common in adults in general, but it tends to become even more common as we get older. In fact, when I was a medical student back in 2001, long before I knew I wanted to practice geriatrics, our annual variety show included this. Okay, so as you can see, constipation has often actually been treated as a bit of a punchline, but in fact, it's something that we take quite seriously in geriatrics, and that's because it is not only an important quality of life issue, but it also can affect other aspects of an older person's health. However, the truth is that many health providers who are not geriatricians may not take it so seriously. They may either overlook it or suboptimally manage it. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, many health providers are focused on what they consider to be more serious health problems. And they might treat constipation as one of those sort of common things in aging that's, you know, maybe is a little bit beneath their attention. Or they may assume that since many laxatives are available over the counter, they may assume that people will just treat themselves if necessary. But in fact, my experience has been that most people don't know enough about over-the-counter laxatives to correctly choose among them and correctly use them. And in fact, I think when one goes to the drugstore, there can be so many choices that can be overwhelming unless you've had some guidance on what to look for and how to use it. So, geriatricians such as myself generally believe that constipation is important, and since it is a common issue, I want you to learn more about it, and I think it's important that older adults and their families understand the basics of how it should be evaluated and managed, especially in later life. This way, you can get better help from your health providers, and if it seems advisable, you can be better informed if you need to choose among over-the-counter laxative options and if you need to use them. So specifically in this episode, here is what I'll be covering. I'm going to start just by briefly addressing what is chronic constipation, what are the common signs and symptoms, and then I'm going to talk about some common causes specifically in older adults. Medications are something that we often think about in geriatrics when it comes to constipation, so I'll go over some of the most common ones that might be causing constipation or making it worse. Then I'll talk about how it should ideally be evaluated and treated. And I'm going to go into what I think you should know about the most commonly used over-the-counter laxatives. I'm also going to talk a little bit about the distinction between a chronic treatment, or what we also call a maintenance treatment, versus a rescue treatment. And I'll finish by taking you through my own approach when I work with older adults and their families. So we're going to get started with that. But before we do, I have a very quick request, which is that if you are here and you find this topic interesting, or if you've been finding my video podcast helpful, if you haven't subscribed yet, if you could please go ahead and do so, it would be really terrific. It would mean a lot to me personally, and it really helps me out. It does help other people find the channel when you subscribe, and that helps support the work that I'm doing. So moving on, let's get into constipation. So first of all, one thing to know is that there are actually no standard diagnostic criteria for constipation as of yet. So it generally means having difficult, you know, and we'll go into what that means, and or infrequent bowel movements. And again, this is a very common condition among people of all ages. It happens to children too, very common among adults of all ages, and it does get more common in later life. So some common signs and symptoms include straining to pass a bowel movement, right? If you have to push or spend a lot of time, that would be called straining. If the stool is very hard or lumpy, especially if that makes it very uncomfortable to get it out. If after going to the bathroom, you have a sense of incomplete evacuation, like there's still something kind of stuck in there, that could be it. There's no exact how many should you be having, but generally, if you're having fewer than three bowel movements per week, that's quite suggestive of constipation. Those people are usually also finding it a little bit hard to pass them when they do try to pass them. Some people end up resorting to, you know, what we euphemistically called manual maneuvers to help the stool come out. They might need to get, you know, their fingers involved or do some sort of pushing or manipulating of the area around their rectum. So that would be constipation. And if those symptoms have been going on for 3 months or more, then it's considered chronic constipation. And that's especially what I'm going to cover in this episode. So again, a common question is, well, what's normal, right? You know, how often should a normal person be going? It's very variable. It also differs in various parts of the world because it's clearly very tied to diet and what we eat. So generally, it's probably optimal to have about one every day, but I would say every 2 to 3 days is okay, provided that they aren't very hard, painful, or difficult to pass. And so often, if I'm getting involved in trying to treat constipation with someone, you know, we'll set as the goal, you know, a comfortable bowel movement every 1 to 2 days is probably, you know, what we usually aim for. Now, why do we take constipation so seriously in geriatrics? Well, it often has consequences for people, especially for older adults. So first of all, it can cause abdominal discomfort. It can cause bloating, a sense of fullness, and this can affect appetite in some older adults. And it's just uncomfortable. It's a quality of life issue. Regularly straining does tend to promote hemorrhoids, which can bleed and can be quite painful. The external ones can be very painful. It can actually cause fecal incontinence. People are sometimes surprised to hear this, but sometimes when people are actually having smears or, you know, stool that seems loose, that can actually be related to having a very hard, stiff ball of stool that the body is then sort of pushing against, and some stuff is leaking out. So it can cause fecal incontinence problems. It can make people irritable. And this can actually be an issue, especially in those people who have a memory loss condition, such as Alzheimer's or another form of dementia. They may not be able to say, I'm feeling uncomfortable in my belly, I'm feeling constipated. They may just get very irritable, agitated, and act out more. And that can be very challenging for people around them. And it's not fun for them either. Constipation can also just cause stress and pain that could contribute to delirium. So especially older adults who are in the hospital and are already under a lot of stress, that can provoke this condition delirium where your brain works worse than usual because of illness or stress, and constipation can be a contributor to that. Pain medications, and I'll talk about this later in the episode, opiate pain medications do cause constipation. And so sometimes people end up avoiding medication that they actually need because they don't want to be constipated. And then last but not least, if people are constipated too much or for too long, they can have a condition that is called fecal impaction, where the ball of stool is hard and really stoppers them up and can cause quite significant belly pain. It can be such severe belly pain that they have to go to the emergency room or to urgent care because they're in so much pain. The advantage of that is that then they can usually get a little bit of professional help in getting unstoppered. So these are some of the reasons why we take constipation seriously in geriatrics. So we're going to talk more about sort of what causes it and how it should be evaluated and how it should be treated. But to do that, I think it can be helpful to start by understanding a little bit better of, you know, what does it take to have a normal bowel movement? So fundamentally, to have a normal a bowel movement, the body needs to be able to do the following. So first, it has to move the fecal material, the, you know, the stuff that's left over after you ate, which is in your colon, and your colon is in your belly, kind of the lower part of the middle and lower part of your belly. It needs to be able to move that material through the colon from the right side over to the left side without it taking excessive time. Because the longer that stool is in the colon, the job of the colon is actually to retain water for your body. So the longer stool stays in your colon, the drier and harder it gets. So your body needs to be able to move that along within a reasonable time frame. And then it has to do what's called coordinate a defecation response. So once the stool moves to the rectum, your muscles and nerves have to work in this coordinated fashion to push it out at the at a suitable moment. And so this does require properly working nerves and pelvic muscles. And so sometimes when people are constipated, it could be related to a problem with this. And basically, as we get older, it becomes common to have difficulty with one or both of these processes for various reasons. So what are some of these reasons that can cause or contribute to constipation as we get older? So one is going to be medication side effects, and I'll be talking more about those in a moment. Another one is insufficient dietary fiber. Dietary fiber doesn't get absorbed into the bloodstream, but it is a bulking agent that helps your body move things along. It also plays actually a very important role in nourishing your microbiome, and that has implications for your gut health and your bowel movements as well. Another cause would be insufficient water intake. So I recently did an episode about dehydration. Many older adults are not taking in enough water for various reasons, sometimes because they're concerned about urinary continence issues. So if you're a bit dehydrated, that's going to make it even harder for your body to successfully move along the stool before it gets too hard and difficult. Another thing that can potentially cause constipation are electrolyte imbalances, including abnormal blood levels of calcium, potassium, or magnesium. And those can happen to older adults sometimes because of the side effects of medications they're on, sometimes for other reasons. Another potential cause would be an endocrine disorder, particularly hypothyroidism. When thyroid levels are low, that is associated with constipation. And then there's also people developing what's called slow transit. This can be due to chronic nerve dysfunction or what's also called autonomic dysfunction. So we have an enormous network of nerves in the gut, actually. They're very closely involved with the autonomic nervous system. So that's your non-voluntary nerve system that controls your fight or flight response and also your rest and digest response. That's the parasympathetic side. So sometimes those nerves start not working well, and that can be due to something degenerative, such as Parkinson's disease, or it can be due to other conditions that can damage nerves over time, such as longstanding diabetes. Another potential cause to consider is irritable bowel syndrome. Now, this is often something that people have had earlier in life, and it's associated with belly pain and then constipation or diarrhea. Some people have predominantly constipation, some people predominantly diarrhea, some a mix of both, but that's also another potential condition to consider. Then there can be pelvic floor dysfunction. So again, something that has affected the muscles in the pelvis or the nerves right in the pelvis that coordinate that response for pooping. Another cause is psychological factors. We know that the mind has a powerful interplay with the rest of the body, including with the gut. So anxiety, depression, or even fear of pain during the bowel movement can also influence constipation. Very low levels of physical activity are also believed to promote constipation. And then last but definitely not least, we always want to consider the possibility of what we call mechanical obstruction. So that means that somewhere in the colon, there is some kind of mass or lump or narrowing of the colon or another physical factor that is making it hard for fecal matter to move by successfully. Now, this can potentially be due to something like cancer, but there are also non-cancerous reasons that people can have mechanical obstructions as well. So given that, let me now talk about medications, because in geriatrics, if we realize that an older person is constipated, we almost always start by taking a look at medications and seeing which ones might be contributing. So some medications that you'll want to think about if you've had any concerns about constipation include, first of all, anticholinergics. So I have a whole video covering these because these do slow down brain function, and they also slow down your rest and digest system as well. So this is a broad class of medications that affect acetylcholine, a neurotransmitter that is really important to the way your neurons communicate with each other in your brain. So it affects thinking, but also it's heavily involved in the function of the parasympathetic nervous system, the one that does rest and digest. So anticholinergics are often prescribed, and they also exist in commonly used over-the-counter medications. They include things like sedating antihistamines, medications for overactive bladder, muscle relaxants, anti-nausea medications, and more. If you want to learn more about them, please check out my related video that will describe them in detail. Another type of medication that is also almost always constipating are opiate painkillers, such as codeine, morphine, and oxycodone. Diuretics can also cause constipation in part because they reduce your level of hydration. Some forms of calcium supplementation are also quite constipated. So certain calcium supplements will also do it. And also certain forms of iron supplementation. The most common forms, iron sulfate, are also constipating. So that's a good reason to actually make sure you really need those iron supplements if you are taking them or if they were recommended to you. And then there's a type of medication often used for high blood pressure or heart conditions, a class that's called calcium channel blockers. Those can potentially be constipating as well. So let me now talk about the medical evaluation of constipation. So if you've been having some constipation, I do recommend that you bring it up to your health provider. And what should happen then? So in general, what they should do is first of all, take a history, which means ask you more questions about it. How long has it been going on? You know, what seems to make it better? What seems to make it worse? What frequency are we talking about? What's the exact difficulty that's going on? Those are elements of the history. And then the provider should also ideally do a physical exam with a special focus on, you know, examining the belly. And they will also often examine the rectum as well. And then they may send you for some additional lab tests. A very important thing that should be happening during this initial medical evaluation is an assessment for red flags, what we call alarm symptoms. These are signs that this might be something more than garden variety constipation. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of the constipation we see is what we consider kind of garden variety constipation, not related to a serious underlying health condition. But we don't want to miss it if there could be a serious underlying health condition. So what are these red flag symptoms that we might look for? They would include things like blood in the poop. You definitely want to bring that up. If you've noticed red blood or if the stool is black, that would be concerning. Now, it's also quite possible for people to have microscopic amounts of blood in their stool, in which case it won't be visible to them in the toilet. But this can be easily checked in clinic. The provider can put a finger in there, get a little sample, put it on a card, and add a special substance that will show if there's blood. Or sometimes they'll give you a card to take home and you put the sample on yourself, it gets mailed in, and then they can check for microscopic blood in that way. Another potential red flag would be iron deficiency anemia. And if you'd like to learn more about anemia, including iron deficiency anemia, I have a video and also an article on Better Health While Aging that cover that in depth. Another red flag would be unexplained weight loss, especially 10 pounds or more. It's also concerning if the symptoms are relatively new and seem very obstructive. So pain with the bowel movement, a lot of bloating, you know, that's new, that would be concerning. Rectal pain, you know, pain in your behind when you're having a bowel movement or at other times, that would be concerning. And then if there is a family history of colorectal cancer or of what we call inflammatory bowel disease, so that means conditions such as Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, we'll want to know about that as well. And then your health provider may order additional tests. So they do often order some blood work, you know, in part to make sure that there's no anemia or signs of iron deficiency and to make sure that the electrolytes aren't out of whack. And if you want to learn more about blood tests, I have a video about that as well. But they may also order some imaging tests. And so I just want to speak to a few of those right now. So first of all, there is the possibility of doing a plain x-ray of the abdomen. Now you may think, well, why would they do that? Because, you know, this isn't about bones, right? And sometimes people think that x-rays are about bones. It's true, x-rays are very good for looking at bones, but x-rays will also, an x-ray of the belly will also detect a distended colon that is what we call FOS, which stands for full of stool, of course. You can actually see if somebody has a big backup and a lot of stool in there. So especially if an older person comes in and they've had some belly pain, and maybe it's not clear if they've been constipated, this can be the case, especially for an older person who maybe has been having some difficulties with memory or lives alone, then the x-ray can help us determine whether they really do have a big backlog of poop in there or not. So it's not necessary, but it can be useful. Another test that is sometimes done would be a CAT scan of the abdomen. So this provides a lot more detail on what is going on in there, can help identify, you know, masses if that's a concern. That's mostly used if there are red flag symptoms. We wouldn't do it otherwise if we just suspect garden variety constipation. And then there's the possibility of a colonoscopy. So this is especially used if there are signs of bleeding or if there's concern about an obstruction in the colon, they might get a colonoscopy. And it can also be a good idea if the person is otherwise overdue for colon cancer screening or if they've had weight loss or other signs that there might be something strange going on with their colon. So that's the initial evaluation. And what we find is that in older adults, constipation tends to be what we call multifactorial, which means that there are often a few factors that seem likely to be causing or contributing to the constipation. So we try to identify as many of those factors as possible and work on them. The most common things that we're initially going to check for and often identify would be medication side effects, low intake of dietary fiber, low fluid intake, and then possibly the issue might be, you know, painful bowel movement due to a hemorrhoid, or there can be something called an anal fissure, which is kind of, you know, like a crack in the lining of the rectum. It can be benign, but often very, very painful if it is there because it's very sensitive tissue down there. So barring red flags or other worrisome signs, we usually don't do further investigation at that time to check for pelvic floor dysfunction or autonomic deficiencies. Instead, we would generally start with lifestyle changes and over-the-counter laxatives, see if we can get the person to be less constipated through that method, you know, again, aiming for a comfortable bowel movement every 1 to 2 days. And then if we're still not successful, that's when we might consider further evaluation to see if maybe they need more specialized evaluation and care for something like pelvic floor dysfunction. Let's now move on to treating, managing and treating constipation. So again, in most cases, there are no red flags or signs of mechanical obstruction. And so we treat it as, you know, what I think of as garden variety constipation. So we're going to try to identify and reduce any constipating medications if possible. We're going to encourage the person to increase their fiber and fluid intake. We're going to think about encouraging a regular toilet routine because toilet time after meals and exercise can be especially effective. And we also want to develop sort of good habits, you know, like not ignoring the signal if you feel like you need to go, because that's very confusing for the body. Another thing to consider is actually a toilet stool to create a squatting posture, because when we are in a squat, it actually creates an angle that makes it easier for stool to exit the rectum. So in the United States, people are generally not going to want to squat. We don't have squatting type toilets, but we can get a similar posture by using a small toilet stool, such as the squatty potty, which you may have heard of. If the person has enough mobility in their legs and hips, and they're able to put their feet up, when we elevate the feet up about 8 inches or so, that creates a squatting kind of posture, and that can make bowel movements more easier. And then if that's still not enough, we'll start considering over-the-counter laxatives to establish and maintain regular bowel movements. So let me now say a few words about fiber for constipation, because there are a few sort of special considerations, I would say, in later life, especially once people get much older and frailer. Fiber definitely can help. And fiber in general is a great idea as part of a dietary strategy for a healthy brain and a healthy body. It not only helps you, tends to help move along bowel movements better, but it's a really important component to maintaining a healthier microbiome. That's the population of gut bacteria, which we now know are very important to communicating with our immune system and maintaining our health. So fiber overall is great. However, especially if you use a fiber supplement such as Metamucil, it often in older adults makes slow transit constipation worse. So we do see that some people, their bowel movements improve when they take a fiber supplement, but other people actually get quite stoppered up. And that is in part because fiber supplements require a lot of fluid intake to go with them. So if you have an older adult who is already struggling to stay hydrated enough for various reasons, maybe they don't want to have to pee and go to the bathroom, maybe they're forgetting to drink. There can be various reasons why people might not be drinking enough. A fiber supplement such as Metamucil can make things worse. Furthermore, if you decide to increase your fiber through diet or through a supplement, what's really best is to increase it slowly. So people sometimes read that, you know, they should be taking 25 grams of fiber a day. And so they start, you know, right off the bat trying to take that in a supplemental fashion. And that is just too much for their body and their colon. Their gut is not used to it, and they can get terrible bloating and a lot of discomfort. So instead, if you decide to increase fiber, you want to start with adding a little bit, like 5 grams per day, and then increasing that amount once a week until you get up to either a max of 35 grams a day or to the level that you feel like your body can tolerate. Another thing I want to recommend is that you really start by trying to increase dietary fiber before you turn to a supplement such as psyllium. The brand name is Metamucil. So prunes in late life are a cliche, but they are actually really good for this kind of thing. So first of all, they have quite a lot of fiber. And then they also contain a certain type of sugar that draws water into the bowels. So they have a certain osmotic laxative effect as well. Now, they can also increase blood sugar. And so that can be a concern for some people. But if that's not too much of a concern, I would say eating prunes is a great option. And we often do encourage that. So that's what I have to share about fiber. And let me now tell you about the three types of over-the-counter laxative that work. So one type is a class called osmotic agents. And so the way these work is that they contain non-absorbable sugars or solutes that then draw water into the colon through the process of osmosis. And when the stool contains more water, it's easier to move it along and to pass it comfortably. So the best known is polyethylene glycol. The brand name is Miralax. It's often available as a generic under the sort of brand name of whatever drugstore you go to. Some other osmotic laxatives include sorbitol and lactulose. There are also some magnesium-based laxatives that also work through this mechanism, and those can be used as well. So again, the mechanism of action is that they draw extra water into the stool, which makes it easier to pass. Now, the thing about magnesium-based laxatives is we actually don't use them all that often in geriatrics. And the reason for this is that magnesium is cleared in the body by the kidneys, and quite a number of older adults do have reduced kidney function. So we tend to not use a magnesium laxative in an ongoing fashion. And we do tend to assume, if we're getting involved with laxatives, that the person will be using the laxatives indefinitely. However, it can be a good option for some people who are in midlife or younger adults. So next type of laxative you should know about is what's called a stimulant laxative, a stimulant agent. Some examples of these would be Senna or Bisacodyl. The brand names would be Senacot and Ducalax. And the way these work is that they actually stimulate the colon to contract more and to keep moving things along. And they can be quite effective as well. And so often in geriatrics, what we end up doing is actually using a combination of these because they're sort of complementary in action. And then there's a third type of laxative that is also effective, and that would be bulking agents. So this would be your kind of soluble fiber supplement, psyllium, brand name Metamucil, or there's a different type of agent. The brand name is Citracel. But again, with this, you know, the caveat is they must be taken with extra water, or they can cause the person to get blocked up, and they can even cause fecal impaction. Now, is it safe to use these indefinitely? There was for a while this pervasive myth that if you use laxatives regularly, your colon would get sort of lazy and forget how to work and that it was dangerous. And this has essentially been debunked. It's true that many older adults end up taking laxatives indefinitely. But we don't think that this is because the colon got lazy or used to the laxative. It's really because of other things going on with the person's health that have slowed them down. And I can tell you that just in general, we have lots of people within geriatric clinics who have been taking some amount of laxative for years and seem to be tolerating it fine. So these are considered safe for chronic use. And especially if you've had chronic constipation for more than 3 months, it's possible that if you change your diet and dietary fiber and lifestyle, that you might improve your constipation and not need laxatives long term. And I encourage you to try for that. And especially when it comes to frailer older adults, we find that many of them just end up needing some amount of laxative regularly to prevent uncomfortable constipation or fecal impaction. Now, let me talk about one fourth type of laxative that is available over the counter and used to be given quite a lot in hospitals. I'm not sure if it's still the case right now, but it actually doesn't work very well. And those are stool softeners. So specifically, docusate sodium, brand name Colace, is actually not really an effective laxative. Now, the mechanism of action for this is that it's almost a little bit like soap. It creates a little extra lubrication and slipperiness around the stool, which can maybe make it a little easier to pass, but it has been studied quite a lot, and it's much less effective than the other types of laxative. And generally, when it's studied, it's concluded that it's kind of minimally effective. So my advice would be to not bother with this type of laxative. And if it's prescribed or recommended, to ask some additional questions. And in my related article on better health while aging on constipation, I have links to some references for anybody who wants those. Let me now talk a little bit about maintenance versus rescue, because I find that it's a useful concept to understand. So within laxatives, I think of us as trying to find a good maintenance regimen for someone, and then there will be the rescue type of regimen that we hopefully don't need to use very often. So what does this mean? So maintenance treatments would mean the laxatives that you take regularly to continue to have regular bowel movements. So it's going to be some combination to have a comfortable bowel movement every 1 to 2 days. So it might look like one dose of Miralax every morning and 2 tabs of Senna at night. It might look like one dose of Miralax every other morning and 1 tab of Senna every night. It does often take a little bit of trial and error to find the right combination that generally prevents constipation and works for a specific person. And sometimes we have to adjust that combination too, depending on what happens with their medications or their health or their diet as well. And then what we want to do is monitor the bowel movements and be ready to adjust a little bit as needed. So if for some reason the person seems to be going a little too often or it's getting a little loose, we might hold a dose. Or we might decide to dial back and kind of, you know, downgrade the maintenance regimen a little bit. Or, you know, if usually they have a bowel movement every 2 days, but now it's the third day they haven't had one, then maybe we give an extra dose to kind of try to goose things along. Because the goal is to avoid needing to implement a rescue. So a rescue is when things have gone so slow and kind of stoppered up that you really have to take a different approach with laxatives and treatments to get the person going again. If a person is quite stoppered up, you can actually cause them quite a lot of pain by giving them a lot more oral laxative, especially stimulant laxatives, because you can end up with the colon kind of pushing, trying to push against an obstruction, and that can cause a lot of pain and distension. So if we think they're really stoppered up, then we switch to rescue, where the goal is to take a different approach and also to really try to clear out that blockage so that we can start again, you know, from kind of a cleaner colon and keep things moving along. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about rescue treatments, but in general, what's very helpful at this point is to use some treatments from below, as one might say, something applied rectally, such as a suppository. Some stimulant medications are available in suppository form and or an enema. And then the idea is once you clear things out and get things cleared out, you can reestablish a maintenance regimen and go from there. So what to know about enemas? So enemas are available over the counter. So they're basically some form of liquid. You insert it rectally. And the ones, especially at the drugstore, tend to be made with saline and some other substances. Enemas definitely have a role in managing constipation. I mean, if somebody is quite stoppered up or really impacted, you're often going to, you know, an enema is often going to be part of the plan. However, it's not recommended that they be used for, you know, as a frequent, regular kind of occurrence, at least not for constipation management. If you're having to use it often to manage constipation, then you really need to work again on the lifestyle factors and the other laxatives. And if you're not successful in getting, you know, a comfortable regular bowel movement with the laxatives and the lifestyle factors, then you may need additional medical evaluation and maybe stepping up to, I'm not going to cover them in today's episode, but there are some, you know, prescription-only laxatives that are kind of the next level up. And some people, you know, need to use those for their condition. So my take on enemas is that occasional use for a rescue or to help with disimpaction is fine, but if you're finding that they're a regular part of what you're doing to prevent or manage constipation, I would encourage you to get more help from your health providers with constipation. And then if you do need to use an enema, frequent saline enemas can cause electrolyte imbalances, especially in older adults. So tap water enemas, a warm tap water enema, is generally considered safer and would be preferable. So let me now talk just a little bit about what's involved when we find we need to treat a really severe stool blockage. So constipation over many days can progress to what we call fecal impaction, where there's a hard ball of stool that is stuck in the rectum and the person can't poop. So the signs and symptoms often include belly pain, abdominal pain, and or distension. And then people sometimes think that this means nothing is coming out the bottom, but actually, especially when it comes to older adults, it's not uncommon for us to see that they will still have some fecal incontinence or leaking. So sometimes I see an older person and I'm told they're having a lot of belly pain and I ask, well, could it be constipation? I'm told, oh, no, they keep having little bits of diarrhea. So that could be actual leaking around a hard wall of stool. And then generally they're not going to be able to pass a large bowel movement. So either they can't pass anything at all, or they might be just occasionally passing some small amounts of hard stool. And then they might also have some leaking or smears or small amounts of diarrhea. So when this has happened, the person really needs a more substantial rescue. And it's fine to start off at home by trying some suppositories and maybe an enema. But if you're not getting results, this does sometimes require rescue treatment in urgent care or sometimes in an emergency room if urgent care is not available. And so there, what will happen is that generally the medical staff will start again by trying enemas and suppositories and seeing if they can soften up whatever is the blockage down there enough to get the person going. And if that doesn't work, then sometimes they do also do something that's called manual disimpaction, where they put on gloves and turn the person over and actually, you know, both poke around and sort of help help the blockage come out. And once that hard stool in the rectum is broken up and we help it come out, then usually a very large amount of stool that was kind of backed up behind it emerges and the person is finally able to clear out what has been in their colon for a while. This generally really provides a lot of relief in many ways, relieves the belly pain and the person feels much better. And then now that we have a mostly clear colon, that's a great time to actually look over the plan and potentially put in some maintenance laxatives to make sure the person doesn't get stoppered up like that again. So given all that, let me just briefly take you through the approach that I use as a geriatrician for constipation. So first of all, I ask about it, right? I don't wait for people to bring it up to me, but I didn't put that here, but I do proactively ask about it. I like to find out how often does the person go and whether it's a comfortable experience or whether it involves a lot of straining. And if it seems like they're not having a comfortable bowel movement every 1 to 2 days, or if there is a lot of straining, then, you know, I try to work on that with them. So I do start by reviewing medications and if possible, reduce or remove those that constipate or make sure they're really necessary. There are people who are taking iron because they think they have iron deficiency anemia or they have anemia and they decide to take iron, but it might not be iron deficiency anemia. So we can often find that they're on medications that are constipating that aren't strictly needed. Next, I do highly encourage the older person and the family to keep a log of bowel movements and laxatives taken. We really need information on what's going on so that we can do our trial and error and improve the situation. I tend to start by encouraging prunes and more fiber-rich foods and also hydration, a regular toilet routine, more physical activity. If the person is open to a toilet stool, we can try that as well. And then if we're still having some challenges with constipation, then we might try adding a laxative. I tend to start with a daily osmotic laxative, such as Miralax. And then if we still need a little bit, you know, more laxative, I might add a stimulant as well. But I think there's no particular right or wrong way to do it. You could start with a stimulant first instead, and then add the osmotic one if you preferred. And again, it's going to take a little trial and error. That's why that sort of logging of what's going on is especially important. And then again, especially since I tend to work with people who are much older and seem to have quite slow colons, I'm careful about a bulking laxative, you know, a fiber supplement such as Metamucil. We try it occasionally, but again, I want people to keep a log and really notice, did it make things better or did it actually slow things down more? Because this can stopper up frail older adults, especially if they're not drinking very much. And that is my approach to constipation. So to recap my key points quickly, this is a very common problem in aging, but should not be considered normal. It's an important quality of life issue. It can cause or be related to significant health issues, can also cause agitation or acting out in people with Alzheimer's dementia. So it deserves to be evaluated and managed in collaboration with your health providers. It can often be treated with lifestyle changes. However, it's also fairly common for people to end up including ongoing treatment with laxatives as part of the ongoing maintenance plan. It's common, it's safe, and I don't think it's better to be constipated than to be taking laxatives regularly. I think it's better to be going regularly. If you have had any concerns about constipation, I highly encourage you to talk to your health provider. You want to get checked for those red flags. You want to get help assessing whether any of the medications you're on might be contributing. The mainstays of treatment, assuming there are no red flags, initially should be increased dietary fiber and fluid intake. Consider prunes if you can. Encourage a regular toilet routine, especially try to go after meals or after exercise. Consider the toilet stool. And then if it's still needed, use over-the-counter laxatives to establish and maintain regular bowel movements. In geriatrics, I would say the over-the-counter laxatives we use the most are osmotic laxatives such as Miralax, and then stimulant laxatives such as Senna. And keep a journal so that you can work effectively with your health provider and your care circle to figure out the right combination that works for you or for your older loved one if you are helping someone. And you can try out a bulking fiber supplement such as Metamucil, but again, remember that these require a lot of hydration and they can stopper up somebody who has a slow colon. Last but not least, enemas can be a good option for rescue, but I would not recommend them as part of, you know, the mainstay or maintenance regimen. In fact, a good maintenance regimen should help avoid the need for rescue treatments such as enemas. And so that's it. So with that, thank you all so much for watching. And if you found this episode helpful, if you're here on YouTube, please go ahead and subscribe. It does help more people find the channel. If you've been listening to the audio version on the podcast feed, please come and take a look at the video if you get a chance. You'll see my key points being displayed on the screen. So thank you again, and I look forward to seeing you all again on a future episode of the Better Health While Aging video podcast.